Well, good morning. I'm so glad you're here today. And some of you might have got this in the mail. It's a brand new series that we're starting today, Upgrade Your Life in a Downsized World. And it got me to thinking about this whole thing about recessions and whatever. I saw an article here that I got from Pew Research. In fact, here it is right here, Pew Research. It's How the Great Recession Has Changed Life in America. And they start talking about the 13 recessions since the last Great Depression, and I noticed that several of these have happened in my lifetime, and even in my married lifetime, and to be honest with you, when you are in graduate school, and you're just squeaking by, and you're just barely making it, the good years and the lean years, you don't even hardly notice. You know, I lived through several recessions I didn't even know existed. It's just true, and because it depends on kind of where you're at locally in this situation. It's kind of like sometimes, I don't know if you lived on the coast, I know Eureka, California, places like that. You can have a tsunami, and then a tsunami warning, and then all of a sudden they said, well, the tsunami really hit, and it was like a two-foot wave. And so it depends on where you're at with some of these things that happen with these different recessions. And so Pam and I have lived through several recessions and several really hot economy times, and we didn't know the economy was really hot, given our budget and things that were going on. And with the recession, it didn't feel much different, but this one's been different. I think it has, and in this article, it says something about of the 13 recessions that the American public have endured since the Great Depression, 1920 to 1933, none have presented a more punishing combination of length, breadth, and depth than this one. And so the research of this Great Recession has led to a downsizing of Americans' expectations about several things, about their retirement, their children's future, new frugality in spending habits and borrowing habits, and a concern that it could last for several years, at a minimum, for their house values and family finance to recover. And so, you know, I think it has been a little bit different. We all know that. We all know it's been tough out there, and we're aware of that. And since we just thought that the Bible really had a lot of information in it that was super relevant. We all know that, you know, some of you might not know, the recession officially hit in December 2007, and then the recession was over, which was a shock to many of you, because it doesn't feel much different for many of you, kind of like where things are at. And now, you know, I don't mind double dips when it's on an ice cream cone, but we're hearing this double dip thing in terms of our economy, and it's just not something that any of us want to hear. It might happen, it might not, we don't know. In fact, the one thing I have learned from all of this, nobody really knows what's going on. Nobody does. You can buy all these, you know, listen to all these experts or whatever, and no one really seems to know what's going on. And it's very interesting because it's very spotty. And you can have certain areas, like our area, you know, there are certain areas in America, I've got this on a stat here, where your housing prices have dropped dramatically. Now, I think across America, it has dropped quite a bit. In fact, one stat said 45% of homes lost a gigantic amount. But especially, there's 20% where homes have been hit dramatically hard, and we happen to be in one of those areas. That's just a reality of where we're at. But are there opportunities? Absolutely there are. And there's a lot of things we can learn from this. And like for us, you know, it was, you know, the way Pam and I look at it, frankly, a lot of us just been on paper. You know, we've gotten a place, and then all of a sudden, someone said it was worth this, and now it's worth this. But I still have had to go out and mow our lawn every week, okay? And so as far as every week what's going on, and it's very fascinating from these studies too, and I think a lot of it has to do with faith and behind this, is some of the people that have been hit the most dramatically hardest are the same people that have some of the most optimism about the future, about what's going on. And I think it's when God's all you have, God's all you need. And that's part of what we're going to look at today, just a little bit. And so I want to put this whole reality that we've looked at in a little bit larger context, because I think it is really, really a wonderful time for us, all of us here, to upgrade our personal life. it's possible to have just a hot economy and a lot of great things going on, and your own personal life is just kind of taking a dive. It's possible to have an economy that is just really unpredictable. It's possible to where a lot of things going on and things you've worked hard for economically can kind of be shaken up. But yet, if it leads you to the point to where you say something like this, I just want to grow spiritually. You know what? That's gold. That's gold in God's eyes. Because God wants to bless many of us in His way, and He will, and He has already. But if whatever it takes to navigate and get us to the point to where we remember that we live on this little planet by the grace of God, the air we breathe every day is because of this stratosphere, and that we're zipping around soul in this little, tiny, gigantic solar system, to remember that we have a friend in this God who created the universe, that's a good day for us individually to be aware of. So I just really want to start this series. Then you can get your notes out. There's some really simple notes. We call them New Life Notes in your program. And it's a lot easier to follow along. There'll be some scriptures there you can look at. And I just want to start out this simple teaching today with just a question. The question is, are you happy? And that's a really important question, because they've done all kinds of surveys. And I think truly, and they would admit this on surveys, tons of people say, oh yes, I'm happy. But it's the same type of surveys. They ask the question, do you attend church? And there are tons of people that will go, oh yeah, I have a church home, I attend church. Because for whatever reason, a lot of people want to be seen as someone who kind of does that. But in reality, when they actually have gone and looked into the churches and counted in the pews, the amount of people that say that they have attended church or attend church is way, way more than people who actually attend church. It's a survey on happiness, too. It's like in America today, if you admit you're unhappy, you're seen somehow as some kind of a loser. And so there are a lot more people that they think that they're pretty sure these surveys are not real accurate on the idea of really how happy you are. And the second question on this is, what would make you happy? And I think a word that comes up is more. You know, more love, more affection, maybe even more status, more money. You know, it could be a lot of things. Any of you, there's a Rolling Stone song, and it was an MTV. You know, MTV sometimes has that deal, 100 most influential rock, this area category is rock songs. And they went through all of these different songs. I was shocked to find out the number one song, and went something like this. It starts out, great grammar, I ain't got no, does anyone know how that finishes? Oh, you guys are lame. You are so lame. Yeah, I ain't got no satisfaction. Okay, all right, we'll just let that one go. Yeah, okay. All right. And I really think that's where a lot of people are at. You know, if you could drive it faster, you can hail it more, no matter what it is, there. You know, and our whole commercial economy is like that. I think, what is it? Some kind of beer commercial, maybe Corona or whatever. And it shows people wherever they're at, circumstances they're in. But if you get their product, all of a sudden you end up on the tropical beach. You know, and everything's just phenomenal, just boom. All you have to do is go in and buy an ice cold bottle of Corona, and you're going to, you know, be transported and just relax on this beach. And so there's this thing going on. If you drive our car, if you wear our clothes, if you get this type of home or whatever, all of this stuff's going to be there. And we even new technology. You know, we have things. You know, in fact, this week is going to be the new iPhone thing coming out. And so, you know, if I can just get that new thing, 3D television, 3D flat television, you can get Armani 3D glasses now for that. Did you know? And so you can buy these Armani 3D glasses, for your 3D, HD, TV, LED, whatever, 80-inch television screen, which Bangs & Olufsen now sells for $86,000. You can buy it. And they have a coupon. But now they've come out with a 3D TV. You don't need to wear the glasses. So there you go, you see? So you always have things that are happening. I have some verses that are not in your notes, but I just think they're really applicable given whatever's happening. You know, we're kind of in this wash right now of uncertainty and things that have happened. And of course, a lot of these things where housing prices have dropped, you understand they've dropped from this hyper peak of where the housing price market was. You're aware of that, right? When they measure, it isn't measuring for what your home was worth in 2001. They're going from the hyper peak of what happened. And so it doesn't mean it doesn't hurt, no doubt. But so listen, there's a verse, Proverbs 27:20, and it says this: human desires are like the world of the dead. There's always room for more. That's right in the Bible. And so we always want more. We have more. There's a book called Ecclesiastes in the Old Testament, and this really wise teacher said this about reality of human nature. He said, "You will never be satisfied if you long to be rich. You will never get what you want." You know why? Because what you have will never be enough. What do you need? Just a little bit more. Just a little bit more. And you know what? Really, if you look at the world's economy, we understand, I've taught you, those who have been teaching here before, that if you are in the United States of America, even in the poorest ranges, you are the wealthy of the world. If you make $20,000 a year, you are extremely wealthy in the world. So really, when we talk rich, it's a matter of degree, is it not? It's a matter of degree. Here's another verse. It says this: there's more expenses. The more money you have, the more you spend, right up to the limits of your income. Have you ever watched this television program on how the states got their borders? And I was looking at how the state of California got its borders and some other western states like the state of Colorado and others. What I didn't realize, that all had to do with gold rushes. And in fact, the commentator, what they did is they kind of cut out certain states where the gold fields were at, and that became those new state borders. And the commentator said at the end of this, he says, when you look at the borders of the state of California became its shape out of greed, out of desire to really move ahead. And it says, and really, most of the people made no money off of gold. The gold they got that day, this is the critical part of a lot of, you know, I understand the history of this region is very old with different peoples. I'm aware of that, and I recognize that. But for what we call the current state of California, guys would get the amount of gold they got, and this is what the historian said, and they would go out and they would spend it all that day. They go out, get their money, and then they would spend it all. And it seems to fit right here with money coming in, and then you spend to the limits of it. You know, and so, you know, if you look at your neighbor and their grass is greener, you need to realize, you know what the reality is? Their water bill is probably higher, okay? You just need to be aware of that. You know, so they got all the shiny new and whatever. Maybe, but maybe not. So going on, Ecclesiastes, and this is just another one here. I'm giving you some real foundation that are very, very simple, six words I'm going to let you know about, okay? You have more worries. Ecclesiastes 5:12, a working man can get a good night's sleep, but the rich man has so much that he stays awake worrying about. What's that? You know, how am I going to avoid more taxes? You know, talking about how am I going to protect my investments? There's all kinds of things. There's something to be said for going to work, do your thing, and then you go home. And so we have so many things. You know, America, we have so many things. We have so many things compared to a lot of people of the world. By the year 2030, we're going to be like 8 billion people, somewhere in that range. And we're still projected to see about one-third of them living on less than $2 a day in current money. And, you know, I'm not saying that we shouldn't have what we have or that God hasn't blessed us, but we do feel a lot more of these stresses and strains to keep what we would call a decent style of living. And there has been downsizing for what we call a decent style of living. So what do we do with that? How do we have contentment in the reality? that we're in. Philippians 4, 10 through 13 is Paul. Paul was a business owner. He was an entrepreneur. And I don't know if this is on our video screen or not, to have this passage up here. Where he's at right now, he's one of the great early teachers of the church. He had been a terrorist and a murderer, and God radically changed his life. And he owned a company that he could take anywhere in the known world and had several employees. But guess what? When you're arrested, you don't make money, even in his business. And he's in jail right now for his faith. In fact, he ended up being executed eventually. But he says this. He's writing to a group of people that knew he's in jail. This is Roman jails. You know what that means? They did not have a state fund to feed the prisoners. If you're in jail, you better have friends bring you food every day or you're done. That's what it was like then. And so he's writing to a group of people that knew he was in jail. His situation, he was in house arrest for quite a while before he was put in a dungeon. But he says, "How I praise the Lord that you're concerned about me again. I know you've always been concerned about me, but you didn't have a chance to help me. Not that I was ever in need, for I have learned," here it is, "for I have learned how to be content with whatever I have." That's a question you can ask in the back of your mind. Do I know that? Do I know how to do that? I know how to live on almost nothing or with everything. I have learned the secret of living in every situation, whether it is with a full stomach or empty, with plenty or little. For I can do everything through Christ who gives me strength. Wow, what a wonderful aspiration. You know, I read this sometimes and I'm going, I'm not sure I'm there yet. And maybe you struggle with that too. Do you have a little blank somewhere on your new life notes? I want you to write these three things down really quickly, and then I'm going to give you these words that are to fill in your blanks. The first is this. Somewhere on your notes, turn the page or whatever, you'll find a little blank spot of paper, maybe, and you can write number one down. Contentment is a learned experience. Contentment is a learned experience. We're not natural to just want to be content. We're not. We always kind of want more. We're not born that way. It is natural to complain. It's natural to not to be content. It's natural to be discontent, actually. Number two is this. You learn contentment when you go through tough times. You learn contentment when you go through tough times. When you have a margin, you tend to waste more. Even corporations have learned that about how there can just be areas that you really can trim and you can do without and do just as well and be just as efficient. You know, the American worker is incredibly efficient. I'm so proud about that part of our culture. And we work very hard and we're extremely efficient. But boy, any of us can have waste if we're not aware of it. Number three, it's a learned experience. You learn contentment when you go through tough times. And then number three, in tough times, okay, just say it this way. Tough times lifts the lid of achievement. Tough times lifts the lid of achievement. Tough times lifts the lid of achievement. You know, again, when God is all you need, when God is all you have, that's really what it's saying here. New Life Church has found this more than once. You know, in the history of New Life, we've had times where we didn't have a place to meet. We met outdoors for 3 months. And you know what we learned during that time? We didn't really need a building to worship God. We didn't need a building to love other people. We didn't need a building to continue to be generous to other people around the world. And so, you know, we're in the process of getting a new facility now, and it's a wonderful tool for us. But we have learned early on in the history of New Life, when God's all you have, God's all you need. And that's really one of the lessons. In fact, we can just go now. If you got that lesson down, you know, that's good enough. If you need to go, that's fine. But I do have some more words that I can give you here. And let me just say this. Contentment is an internal satisfaction that does not demand a change in external circumstances. Contentment comes from within. And your circumstances can come and go, But if you understand the biblical principles of contentment, it is a stabilizer that can have huge benefit in your life. Because a lot of you here, the tears you've shed this week have a whole lot to do with your understanding and your deep conviction. If I only had, if this would change, more of this, whatever. And when you really examine those things closely, you have deep convictions about those things. And you really have a deep expectation. If I just had those things, then I would be content. And the Bible says that might not be correct for you. So I want to give you some great things on this. And the first thing is, what are the enemies of contentment? What are the enemies of when we look at contentment in our life? And the first one comes from a story from Matthew chapter 20 in the New Testament. And it's a great story on hiring people, on jobs, on payments, things like this. And so there was a landowner, and there was urgency to get the vineyards harvested. Maybe there's going to be rain, and so they had to get the things harvested. It's kind of like what's happening in our region right now. And so the normal thing to do was to put the word out there, and there's a whole bunch of workers that showed up early. He hired all these people and gave them a generous, not only just fair, but a generous day's wages. There was an agreement between the owner and these workers. You work and harvest grapes, and at the end of the day, you're going to get this pay. So they put the word out to their friends. They're all there early in the morning, and they went there and they started working on this. The way the story continues in Matthew chapter 20, it's about 9 in the morning. He went out, the owner did, and saw some other people standing around. And so he went up to them and said, look, there's work in my vineyards, and if you go out there and work, I will pay you. He found some others around noon that day, and he gave them, he says, you go work in my vineyards, and I will pay you. And even at 5 o'clock, about an hour left of work, he said, if you go work in my vineyards, I will pay you. And so there was the end of the day, and the way the story goes, Jesus telling the story says, those that were hired at 5 p.m. at the end of the day, an hour later, got the same wage as those who had worked from the beginning of the day. And the term here was denarius. That was a generous day's wage. And so let's kind of pull this apart a little bit and look at this, what happened. And here's kind of the reaction of what happened. Expectations is the enemy of the content. So number one word for you is expectation. An enemy of contentment is expectation. You expect more than you have. You expect more than you have. And so let me read the actual words here in my version of the Bible, and it'll be slightly different than what's on your New Life notes. So, when evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his supervisor, call the workers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last ones, the hired ones, and going to the first. And the workers who were hired about 5 in the afternoon came and each received their denarius. So when they came, who were hired first, here it is. It says here, they assumed they would receive more, but each received the denarius that had been agreed upon. So here's the deal. What happens to our contentment when you're working somewhere and maybe in the back of your mind you expected a higher raise than you actually got? Or you expected a promotion that maybe did not go to you, or a commission that you thought for sure was a slam dunk? Or what about you have a spouse and the amount of affection you expected to receive from your spouse, or the style of affection you wanted to receive from your spouse, you're not getting that. You know, there's a book out there called The Love Languages, and learning to relate with each other in the language that relates best to them. It could be words, affirming words. It could be, you know, acts of kindness or gift giving or whatever. But so what happens if your spouse is not giving or pouring into your life the way you expect that to happen? When you expect more than you receive, it causes discontentment. So are you aware of that? Because we, you know, do you have friends or whatever, you just feel like they're keeping score on you, and you can just kind of tell that, you know, they're asking me to answer their question and affirm them, and I just know that I'm not doing this in the right way with them right now. And they're just kind of keeping this list, and even though they're smiling at me inside, they're just kind of going, nope, nope, nope. And you can have these kind of undefined expectations that other people are not living up to, and guess what? It causes discontentment within our lives. Here's another one, comparison. You think others have more than you have. You think others have more than you have. Let's go on with the story here. Verse 11 and 12 in Matthew chapter 20, verse 11 and 12. So when these workers had received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. These men who were hired last worked only 1 hour, they said, and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the work and the heat of the day. And so here you have it. Just put this in context. You have two sets of workers here. The first set of workers are the only ones, if you look at this passage closely, these are the only ones who actually made a deal with the owner. And it's basically this: owner, you give me this, I will do this for you. And that was the deal. The rest of them were almost like grace. There's nothing where it says the owner went out to the guy at 9 o'clock and at noon and 5 o'clock and said, go work in my vineyards and I'm going to give you the same wage that I gave the guys that worked at the beginning. There's not even talk of a wage here. He just says, if you need work, go work in my vineyards. And these guys didn't negotiate anything. It was just like, great. Yeah, I'm ready to go right now. This is the best news I've ever heard. I'm ready to go out in your vineyard and work, and let's just see whatever happens here. See the difference? The ones kind of had this expectation and demands, and the others were just happy to get in the door and be able to start working in the vineyard. And Jesus, when he's talking about this, the original audience, he's warning his own disciples who have been with him from the beginning. And he's saying basically this, you know what? There are going to be people that hear about me and the good news of who I am late in life. And they're going to get in maybe with not very many years left. But I am dying for them and their sins also. And so don't ever be building up any kind of expectation with God, saying, God, after all the work I've done for you, you should have come through for me more. That's kind of what he's saying here. He's talking about the idea of what God has blessed each and every one of us with if we avail ourselves to him. That's the overall arcing meaning of this story, but it has direct application for us today as we measure this against other people. Look, when we're looking at this idea of comparison, in every circumstance, I have learned contentment is what Paul says, and really, in his time, he had, you know, you might think Paul, when he wrote a lot of the New Testament, had this huge following everywhere. In reality, historians say there were a lot of other leaders who were kind of standing up, who had a lot more charisma, they could talk a lot better, and they could get the people laughing and crying, and they're funny and entertaining, all this stuff. And it appears that there were certain leaders that seemed to be able to draw a larger following at the time, and then there were dutiful people who would always come up to Paul and say, hey, did you know that someone else started a work down the road? And they're already running 10 times the amount you are. Wow, look at them. And there's always that type of thing coming Paul's way. And he actually wrote in here, I don't come with you with a lot, you know, I don't come, I don't look good. You know, some of you say I don't speak well and whatever. And he says, but I don't care about any of that. I just want to do what God wants me to do and all of this. And he never allowed any of those things to bug him at all in any way, because he had no type of comparison on this. You know, this is kind of human nature. Time Magazine, I don't know if you've seen a recent cover. On the cover, it says, "Why Mom Likes You Best." It's the science of favoritism. And you know what? There is something to that. There is something that some people, they get more, they get away with more just through their charisma, their influence ability, even their looks. I mean, the whole Hollywood industry, it's very rare to see a hero leading man who doesn't have bleached white teeth. They're not his teeth he was born with, but somehow, you know, he drinks like a gallon of coffee a day, but somehow his teeth are just white, white, white. There's something going on there. And no matter how old he gets, he seems to have a full head of hair. Have you ever noticed that? And even when the middle age bulge is supposed to be happening, he always seems to keep a flat belly. You know, there are things that can help men to do that, okay? But so there's that whole barrage of all of this that seem to launch people ahead. And Paul isn't worried about any of those things. Look, he says this. He says, "We don't look at the troubles we see right now. Rather, we look forward to what we have not seen. For the troubles we see will soon be over, but the joys to come will last forever." And so Paul had a different perspective on this that allowed him to be content no matter when things were going his way or things were not. Look, another one he says, "We do not dare to classify or compare ourselves with others. It is not wise." So the question to you, are you comparing yourself with anyone today? Maybe it's an older brother. I don't know. You know, I've seen marriages where spouses were in competition with each other. Are you comparing yourself in any way? You know, nothing depreciates your car more than when your neighbor drives home with a brand new car in their driveway. Isn't that true? And all of a sudden they can have the same car and the same model of car, but it's just 3 years newer than yours. And all of a sudden this car you used to like is kind of looking like a used car. Be sure you do what you should, for then you will enjoy the personal satisfaction of having done your work well. And you won't, listen, and you won't need to compare yourself to anyone else. So you have these things going on that we've talked about here of comparing to each other. And the last one here is envy. Envy could just be like a cancer. Envy, you resent what someone else has. You resent what someone else has. Matthew, the owner asked then this, "Are you envious because I was generous?" To those that were grumbling, he says, "Are you envious because I was generous?" And again, this is the context of people who come into a faith with Jesus Christ. And there are people that are going, "Man, I've been serving Jesus for 20 years, and this person just found Jesus 2 weeks ago, and God loves them as much as me. God, after all I've done for you, is this the way you're going to treat me?" That's really what he's talking about here, but it has general application for each one of us when it comes to contentment. Because grace and generosity, you guys, are never fair. They never are. There's stories. Look, envy says this, "I don't only want to have green grass. I want the grass on the other side of the fence to be brown." That's what envy's saying. So you cut their sprinkler line. That's what you do, you know? It's so funny. We just love our neighbors, and they put in all kinds of work on their lawn all the time. They have people mow it and everything. And this is the honest truth. You know, they water it all the time. They do all this stuff. And I do nothing to my lawn. I just ignore my lawn. I keep praying that it'll turn into AstroTurf, okay? So that's kind of, you know, kind of green thumb dude I am. But then when it comes time to mow my lawn, after I mow my lawn, if you look at their lawn and my lawn after I mow it, they look almost identical. I mean, we have a few little brown spots and whatever, and they spend all that money on their lawn, and I spend hardly anything on my lawn. I don't know why I'm telling you that story. I guess I was just in the lawns, but... But it's just you can work so hard, you know, try to be in competition with each other on stuff like that. And the truth is, in every circumstance, you learn to be content. And this envy thing can just kill you. Cain and Abel, the first real crime in the Bible, that was over envy. Did you know that? There's a number of stories like this in the Word of God, but it is like a cancer within our life. Proverbs 14:30 says, a relaxed attitude lengthens life. Jealousy, and that word there means envy, rots it away. And it can just be kind of a quiet thing. Look, what it can be, you might always come across as kind of congenial and smiling, but if on the inside there's this thing going on in your mind that says this, it's not fair, it's not fair, it's not fair, it's not fair. That's kind of that envy thing that can eat away at you. It's kind of a spiritual cancer, and it erodes gratitude in your life. And so you have to cut it out at the root. You have to cut out expectation. That's the idea. I should have this by now. I've worked so hard. I should be at this place in my life by now. You have to cut out comparison. That's that idea. It's unfair. It's not fair. It's not fair. You have to cut out resentment. You know, why not me? Why them? Why not me? And so how can you learn contentment in the ups and downs of all of this? And the word that came to mind here, write this down. You might not know what it means, is stewardship. Write that in. When you understand stewardship, it really is an encouragement and a stabilizer in our life. Stewardship is this. It's a deep conviction in life, listen, that everything belongs to God. And I just have it for a while. Everything belongs to God. I just have it for a while. You know, one of the things that endears me to my grandchildren, when they get old enough, and I'm looking forward to this, to my really, really young ones, I have one of our grandchildren old enough. I am the man with my oldest granddaughter right now. You know why? Because I have this right here. Right here. And you know, sometimes when she's kind of crying and she's upset, I pull my iPhone out and she goes, ooh, and she grabs this, and you know what she does? If the screen's black like this, what she does is she pushes this button here, okay? And I don't know how well you can see this. And then she knows to slide this over right here. And then she can push up here in the corner, and then she can push this other button, and then all of a sudden she can scroll through all of the photographs that are on here. She can navigate the videos and stuff like this. You know, she's way under 2 years old. I think they're going to call them the iPhone babies. I don't know. But this is the truth. When I give this to her, she's sitting there doing all this stuff. And then when I come up to her and I go for my iPhone, you know what happens? And she's looking at me, no. You know, she can't say no yet. You can tell very clearly, what are you doing with my iPhone? Grandpa. And I'm thinking, no, this is my iPhone, and I'm letting you use it for a while. That's what stewardship is. So I've got my house, my job, my career, my prestige, my nest egg, my future, all of these things, and you just have to understand that it all belongs to God. You know, I don't know why people have a meltdown when it comes to money. You know, the church mentions this idea of tithe. They just have a meltdown over that. Really? You know, if you really want contentment, just ask God, God, how much do you want me to give? Whatever. Hey, I'm here. I'm just kind of a steward of this. And just start praying that way. You know, that idea, that old joke about you don't see a U-Haul following the hearse to the funeral? They don't bury all their stuff with them. Really, that comes from 1 Timothy 6, 7, and 8. Did you know that? Look at this. It says, you can't take it with you. It's right from the Bible. You didn't bring anything with us when you came into the world, and we certainly cannot carry anything with us when we die. So if you have enough food and clothing, let us be content. Now, I know there's a group called the Christian Brothers, some Catholic brothers, that live actually in the Northern Bay Area here. And I know some of these guys have worn like, you know, some of the same shirts for like 20 years. Yeah, and they say, you know, we're in solidarity with, you know, with our brothers and stuff who live in, in Nigeria or Mozambique or Somalia or places like that who don't have next to anything. And so it's very notorious what they've done and the symbolism of what they're doing. And I'm not saying you have to do that, you know, just wear the very same shirt every single day for, you know, 20-something years until it's tatters because there are people in need around the world. But what I am saying is, you know, we can just get so over the top with everything. There's a television program called Storage Wars is the name of it. And every week they bid on these lockers. And what it is, you roll this thing up and there's someone's whole life sitting there. And it's someone else's just kind of, you know, junk to other people. And the stuff that a lot of them have put in there, when someone buys that locker, they just grab it and they throw it down the hallway and it just kind of breaks because they're just looking for a few things. It's just become garbage and junk to someone else. It's just stuff. It can become stuff. What about gratitude? Gratitude's another one. Let's do a reality check. What do we really deserve, really? The Bible says we've all sinned and fall short of the glory of God. I love this story. This guy named is Marcinius. He was he lived in Egypt, Christian guy, in the 400s A.D. And he goes out in the desert as a hermit just to try to connect with God. Has a major re-engaging with God. And this is what he said. He came back into the city again. Listen to this quote. He said, "My heart leapt with joy for all of the things that I saw," listen, "that I did not need." He appreciated stuff. I'm not saying you cannot appreciate things. The difference and the change in his heart was I looked at all of this stuff that used to bind and hold me, that kept me away from others, that kept me cherishing my relationships, all this other stuff. And I realized now, you know what? I don't really need this. It doesn't mean you can't have, but he didn't really need it. It's better to see what you have than what you want. Wanting more is useless. Here's that other phrase you might have heard before, like chasing the wind. And then there's, I think, look, if you want greener grass, water your own lawn. What about that? Does that make sense to you? And then surrender. Surrender's the other one here. That's the other word. So stewardship, gratitude, and surrender. Ask God to help you surrender your desire. You know, really, what it is break those emotional habits of associating stuff with contentment. It says, set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. You know, God help me to refocus. Next week, we're going to look at less status, more purpose. And it's going to help ground who we really are in God. So don't be envious of sinful people. Let reverence for the Lord be the concern of your life. If it is, you will have a bright future. I remember when I was in graduate school in Kansas City, and you know, I'd kind of been a West Coast guy, and I didn't realize really the much more, it was subtle but very clear, the demarcations of racism in the Midwest, in this area. And one of these men, I look back at him, and I realized this guy, unbeknownst to him, and actually to me at the time, was one of my mentors. I worked at a warehouse when I was going through graduate school, and this guy named is Walter King, and he'd worked at this warehouse for over 30 years, an older African-American guy. And I remember Walter because he didn't have very many teeth, and every day for lunch, he brought something I'd never heard of before in my life. He brought a chicken bone sandwich. Chicken, yeah, he'd bring like a chicken wing, bones and all, put it between two pieces of bread, and he'd have a chicken bone sandwich. And so we'd sit and eat lunch together, and it was a tough place. And you know, I'd get kind of mopey, and truly, it's so sad to think of this. I was in graduate school to become, like I've confessed this before, to become a minister of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace. And I got in this big row fist fight with one of the dudes I had been witnessing to before. Yeah, right there at work. How awful is that? And I was just really discontent with my situation. It says, look, I've got two college degrees. I've got all this other stuff going on. And look, I'm just working in this warehouse. And Walter King, who could have been really qualified to be the supervisor of that whole warehouse, but they only, listen, in the history of that place, you had workers from all different ethnicities, whatever. They always brought in a white dude from the outside to become the supervisor and manager of that store. for that deal. And that was wrong, and it was racist. There's no doubt about it. And I'm not saying there aren't going to be times where we should address reform in our culture, in our nation. But where Walter was at that time, and he knew the unfairness of the situation that he was in, taught me so much about attitude, you know, taught me so much about courtesy, he taught me so much about respect, and he taught me so much about contentment. And he talked to me and says, John, what were you so angry about that you came to blows with Bob? And, you know, he used a lot of biblical terms when he talked with me, you know, words like damn and hell, things like that. But you know what? You know, this guy maybe wouldn't have been a dude to be the holy pastor up front. But here I was, that religious guy, learning all this Bible stuff and some of the most basic things about life. God used good old Walter King in my life. Don't be envious of other people. Even though they seem to move ahead, they get more sales because they've been dishonest. They get a promotion because they took credit for things that maybe you did. You know what? There's contentment God has for you if you will allow him. Where do you struggle for discontentment? You know what? Eventually it all comes down. We need to surrender. We need to surrender our lives and say, God, you know, this life belongs to you. You know, like the song in our live service here, you give and take away. Blessed be the name of the Lord, you give and take away. If you want to have an anchor, if you want to have contentment, even when the realities and the things that you said, if you just invest enough money, if you just work really hard, you will be at this point in your life economically someday, then all of a sudden that did not happen. How do you still be content when you realize that life has its wonderfulness and its hardships right now, but we hang on to a hope that is here and now, but also greater than here and now. And the greatest thing you can ever do is pass that hope on, if you have kids, to the next generation. That is the greatest thing you can do. You can try to give them financial security, you can try to give them college money, you can try to help them learn how to work hard, get ahead in this world. All those are meritorious. But the greatest thing you can ever do is say, you know what? Our culture says there are certainties, and the only certainty is that they're going to be wrong sometimes and someday. The only thing we know for sure is we have an anchor in Jesus Christ, and he's given us a promise, not only for this life, but for eternity. That's the greatest thing you can live out in other people's lives. That is the greatest inheritance you can ever pass on to anyone else. Let's pray.